Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Hong Kong. Ecuador, Chile, Lebanon, Peru, Catalonia, South Korea, United Kingdom, and on and on. People around the world are mobilizing. This year, we've seen a rise in social movements, and that includes here in the United States, where we've seen auto workers strike, a growing teachers movement, and just a few months ago, the Puerto Rican governor was forced to resign after mass demonstrations.
We're tired of the cynicism. They put down women. They put down the LGBT community. Corruption. It is insane. We are tired. We can't take it anymore.
For some, the rise in social movements is reminiscent of 1968.
Let him go! Let him go!
When protests in nearly every country took the world by storm. We don't get fooled again. It's been more than 10 years since the 2008 global economic crash, and we're supposedly living in recovery. But even in the midst of this strong economy, people are taking to the streets in 2019 and demanding change. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start today on The Takeaway. I'm joined now by Ian Bremmer, president of Eurasia Group. Ian, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And we're also joined by Elizabeth Zechmeister, a political science professor at Vanderbilt University and director of the Latin American Public Opinion Project. Elizabeth, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Ian, when we look at the protests around the world, are there common themes that you see emerging?
I think there are a couple of big ones. The first is that a lot of these countries, maybe the economies are doing okay overall. But, you know, as we see in the United States, a lot of people in middle and working classes feel like things aren't going well for them. And in the emerging markets, particularly anti-corruption themes around that are very strong. But a second point is that the ability of technology, social media, not just to help people mobilize, but also to lead to more polarization inside societies, more anti-establishment sentiment, all the fake news, the fact that we have elections that are now run through Facebook as opposed to traditional media, that's having a really big impact in a lot of these countries. And I definitely think that you wouldn't see the kinds of numbers showing up on the streets if it weren't for that.
And when we here on the show have been covering the protests in Hong Kong, which have been going on for months now. Are those demonstrations unique, Ian, because I'm assuming here they're less directly linked to economic factors?
In the case of Hong Kong, I mean, the economics are playing out because the Chinese government has so much more power than they did during the handover in 1997. Remember, Hong Kong used to be about 13% of the entire Chinese economy. Today, it's about 2%. And that means the Chinese government feels very comfortable changing the rules and squeezing them really hard, even if it means that they don't get a move towards the kind of representative democracy that they had been promised during the handover. They're very angry about it, and that's led to a standoff over a course of many, many months. They don't feel like the government represents them in any way, and increasingly they're right.
Liz, let's focus here on Latin America. We've seen protests in Chile and Ecuador and beyond. What are some of the factors and themes that you're noticing that have changed and added to this this moment of unrest?
Yeah, I think the short answer is that people feel like democracy is failing to deliver. They feel less safe, they feel more economically vulnerable, and at the same time, they feel that their governments are not doing enough to respond to their needs. They see high levels of political corruption, and that's causing a lot of dissatisfaction with democracy.
And when you look at public polling across Latin America, how do people feel generally, not just about their political institutions, but about their future?
Yeah, they're dissatisfied. So we ask in our survey, the America's Barometer, a question about how satisfied people are with how democracy is working in their country. And this latest round of our survey, we found that about 2 out of every 5 adults feels satisfied with how democracy is working, what it's delivering. And if we contrast that with 5 years ago, that number was 60%. So we've seen a 20 percentage point decrease in people's satisfaction with how politics is working in the country. So there's a lot of simmering discontent, and we see it bubbling up into protests in a number of countries in the region.
So most recently, those protests have bubbled up in Chile. What can you tell us about the situation on the ground there and how much that's being affected by economic inequality?
Yeah, I mean, Chile and a number of countries in the region have made some minimal strides in tackling income inequality. Latin America is one of the most unequal regions in the world, though. So there's still a real reservoir of need and sort of preference for the state to do more. And in fact, Chile stands out as a really interesting case because when we ask a question in our survey about how much the state should be doing to address problems of income inequality, Chile stands out as having a public with sort of the strongest desire for the state to intervene and implement strong policies to reduce income inequality. When we compare Chile to other countries, it ranks the highest on that metric. Chile stands out for a couple of other reasons: declining economic opportunity, loss of income. We see this in our survey data when we compare people's reports about how well they're doing now to how well they were doing 5 years ago. We see a real significant shift downward in people's economic well-being.
And Liz, in Ecuador, there was an indigenous-led protest movement that was largely successful. After a relatively short amount of time, the government backed away from much of its austerity measures and invited some of these activists to the table. Is this a unique situation?
It's not entirely unique. I mean, the governments in the region are facing some difficult choices. They've overseen an era over the last 10 to 15 years where there was some economic growth. There were some redistributive programs. Those programs were delivering. They were having some impact on some positive impact on people's lives. And now these countries are facing some challenges with respect to having to sort of, write their books and consider some adjustments. And Ecuador is a great example of that. Economic growth has stalled. Redistributive programs, social assistance have been pulled back. And people know it. They're experiencing it. Food insecurity has increased in Ecuador. The government attempted to make an adjustment that threatened to hurt pocketbooks of vulnerable populations, and the people mobilized, and the government is, I suppose, attempting to strike some middle ground.
Ian, in Latin America in particular, I'm curious, what role has an institution like the International Monetary Fund played in perpetuating economic inequality there?
Well, on the one hand, it's played a very big role in being able to allow governments to continue to stay afloat, have access to the international credit markets, debt markets, for example. But, you know, as you see in Ecuador, the willingness to actually respond positively to continue to provide for the social safety net for these indigenous people means that they're going to be under more pressure with being able to continue to benefit from IMF credit, debt. And that's a real problem for them. I mean, the pressure that comes once you are in a real fiscal crunch, when the IMF is telling you you've got to have austerity, you've got to be able to make your budgets work, you're going to have to repay this debt, while the people are saying, you know, after all of these years of kleptocracy, you have to make the democracy work for us. This is an enormous problem. It's going to be a huge problem in Argentina after upcoming elections when Fernandez almost certainly wins and isn't going to be able to produce for his people. Unfortunately, once you start mismanaging your economy in a relatively poor environment, the spiral grows pretty quickly.
And Ian, we haven't talked yet about Lebanon. Estimated that 1.3 million people, or a fifth of the entire population, protested there over the weekend. What are the roots of those protests?
Well, the immediate roots were a tax being put on a popular app on smartphones, but it's much deeper than that. Again, here it is services not being seen as being provided by the government. Last time you had big demonstrations, it was against people that were not picking up trash around the streets, and so as a consequence of persistent, extraordinary smell and health problems. Now I would say it's much broader than that, but the same exact dynamic where you have the leader of the country, Saad Hariri, who is trying very hard to respond to the demands of the people is they're going to take significant cuts in terms of salaries of government officials. Yeah, that's a useful thing. They're going to raise some money through bank taxation, and the banks are okay with it because they know they've got a problem if they don't in terms of domestic stability. But their ability to make good on creation of new jobs and subsidies to the people, given how little money is actually available, how much less the Saudis and others are prepared to fund them, the fact the Americans aren't really all that interested in expanding our footprint in this part of the world right now, as I'm sure you know, all of those things make it so much more difficult for a government like Lebanon to be able to really string the eye of that needle.
I want to ask both of you, actually, in your respective areas of expertise here, whether or not you see these protests leading to political shifts, particularly more towards the far right. We're seeing that in Europe, in Italy in particular. France has had a strong far right movement for quite some time. In Latin America, we see Bolsonaro at the helm in Brazil. Do either of you see these protests really leading to that type of political change going forward? Ian?
I see it leading to more anti-establishment parties and sentiment. Much of it is on the far right, but certainly not all. I mean, in Greece, you got Syriza on the very far left, pretty unprecedented in Greece for a party like that to run. Of course, in Spain, we've had Podemos doing very well, but we've also had more recently the rise of Vox in terms of anti-immigrant sentiment. I think what you see is a hollowing out of the establishment, and reflecting in the United States, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, that process is a lot more polarized in a lot of the weaker and poorer economies around the world.
Liz, your thoughts on what Ian just said there regarding political shifts. And I'm also curious if you think that we've seen a lot of climate change movement throughout the world, but particularly in Latin America, we know that this is something in Brazil, in particular in the Amazon, whether or not you think that will also lead to more protests.
I think in the Latin American region, it's not so much a question of will these leaders be ideologically on the left or on the right. I think the real important question is how democratic will they be? And what we've seen time and time again is that when the public turns sour on democratic institutions and practices, they become more supportive of, or at least more tolerant of, elected officials whose actions undermine what are already weak institutions. In terms of climate change, what we see in the Latin America and Caribbean region is a high degree of concern with what climate change might mean for the country's future. And this is certainly going to be an issue that governments today and going forward are going to need to address satisfactorily in the region in order to maintain the confidence of the people.
Elizabeth Zechmeister is a political science professor at Vanderbilt University and director of the Latin American Public Opinion Project. And Ian Bremmer is the president of Eurasia Group. Ian, Elizabeth, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.